All right, it's Gene Shepherd time here at WBAI. And we did play this one way back in April of 1999, before anyone was taping these shows and putting them into circulation. Why, it's Super Rats and Topless Blackjack, a monster movie parody, and all from this day in history, April 22nd of 1966. I hope the stream is working and the archives are working. I just got a report that the transmitter isn't working out in New Jersey, or was it Long Island? Don't know what to say. I'll give it a test, do as much as I can do, and hopefully you'll hear this loud and clear. This is WBAI New York, Mass Backwards. Here's Gene Shepherd.
Ratchet, marchet, rambling rose of the wild wood.
Once again, it's time for us to enjoy our daily visit with the Silver Mask Tenor, the man who sings the songs that all of you love, that all of you enjoy hearing, the man who will lead you down memory lane. Marcha, rambling rose of the wild wood. Bring it up big there, Professor. Large, that's it, large. Yes, friends, once again, this radio station is pleased to bring you the Hotsy Totsy Hour. Or everything's coming up, Poison Ivy. From that new hit album, A Pox on You. What a rotten person. This is a clearly anti-Sound of Music show. Undoubtedly, you have suspected the way things are going. Well, the evidence is beginning to pile up. The evidence is beginning to show that not only were your suspicions correct, it has gone even further than your suspicions would allow you to even suspect. Here, for example, is a page of a current comic book. Now, listen carefully. A current comic book that is on the stands. One of those little leaves in the winds, you know, one of those little straws that float past you that tell you what's really happening. It's a Batman-type comic. In fact, it is Batman. It's a full page, and it shows Batman. And with Batman are four other type. You know, the big guys, big fantastic guys with the narrow waist and the enormous bulging muscles. And they're all dressed in those tight suits. You know, they look like they've been sprayed out of this Superman-type suit, the Batman-type suit. And they've all got masks, see? And in the foreground, you see the evil, maniacal scientist who has all four of these fantastic doers of good under his awful curse. All right, you ready for the little scene? He says, and here's the little balloon. This ain't LaGuardia here reading the comics to you, gang. Well, you hear the comic I'm about to read. Hi, George. He is looking at all four of them. He's got an evil, maniacal look in his eye, and his hand is raised, and he says, "Not only are you doomed, not only are you doomed, but everyone else that you have touched is also doomed." And now you see what all four of these heroic types are thinking. You know, the little balloon with the little frizzes around the edges that shows it is thought instead of speech. See, one of them says, "Oh, great Scott, Jean Loring. Jean Loring, I have signed her death warrant." And the one next to him says, Oh, wow, I gave Iris West the kiss of death." And the guy standing next to him says, Oh, no, Carol Ferris, she is in deadly danger." And what does Batman say? "Oh, Robin, what have I done to you?" You can see who Batman is going steady with, can't you? Oh, America, my America. Oh, my beloved country of the fields of waving grain. Oh, America, my beloved America, what the heck's happening to you? I wonder what Batman would do if he found out that those other three guys like girls. Oh, that ain't the only straw in the wind tonight, friends. Boy, oh boy. For a Friday night, I'll... you like that, don't you? I'll tell you, watch, I'll do it again. For a Friday night, things look desperate. Oh, my molar. Oh, oh. I'll try it again. For a Friday night, friends, things look desperate. That's pretty good, isn't it? All right, there are all kinds of straws in the wind. And, you know, for those of you who are Batman Robin fans, it's all right. It's okay. You'll be all right. Just take a few deep knee bends and a few hormone shots, and things will work out eventually, I suppose. Maybe, though. I'm not promising anything. I'm not here to prescribe. Hello, test. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hello, test. Hello, Queens. Hello there. Hello. Oh, excuse me. Hello, hello, Staten Island. That's better. Hello, Staten Island. Hello, 1, 2, eins, zwei, drei. Speaking of straws in the wind, would you please give me some scary music in there, Bob? Oh, boy. Oh. Ow. Yeah. A special bulletin from London. The Ministry of Agriculture disclosed Monday a breed of super rat. A fierce breed of super rat is now threatening Britain's industrial midlands. The rodent, the terrible rodent, was said to thrive on and even enjoy all known normal pesticides. The rats are breeding at a frantic pace in areas near the Welsh border. The ministry reported in outlining plans for an all-out war of extermination. Today, British newspapers are headlining the fantastic development. Rack, all-out war on super rats, said the London Sun. 3-year war on poison-proof rats. Read a banner headline in the mass circulation Daily Mirror. A ministry spokesman said it was found that the new breed of super rat was immune to warinin, an internationally employed safe pest killer which does not harm domestic pets. Farmer Arian Gethin said he had, and we quote him here, I've got hundreds of rats. I've got hundreds and hundreds of rats in my old farm near Welshport, and warfarin has not worked. I'm getting more frightened by the hour. The poison has absolutely no effect on them. They're coming from everywhere. They're super rats. And not only that, the super rats ate the poison, enjoyed it, grew larger, and even thrived on it, by George. A ministry official said it would clear a 3-mile belt around a heavily afflicted region in Shropshire and Montgomeryshire. The rats will be hunted down by trained extermination teams while scientists try to come up with an effective poison. But at this moment, it looks hopeless. The spokesman said it would take as long as 3 years to create a rat-free buffer zone. Actually, we can only do our best to find a better killer before many of them get out and overrun the entire country. And so now, at this very moment, in the peaceful countryside around Shropshire, a new breed of super rat is beginning to make its appearance. How's that, friends, for a straw in the wind? Holy smokes. First it's Batman and Robin, and now it's Super Rats. Holy smokeronies. Super Rats. Speaking of Batman and Robin and Super Rat and Superman, a British scientist recently... Are you sure you've got my gain up high? I think you've got a... Hello, Bob. Hello? You won't... There we go. A little note just came out of Britain the other day. A famous geneticist in Britain wrote a piece in a learned journal about what is happening to mankind. No, what is happening to mankind as a species? He wasn't discussing what's happening to London or what's happening to the Beatles. He was talking about what's happening to mankind, and he said that in about 200 or 300 years, and it has not very much to do with food or with vitamins. He said in the next 200 or 300 years, the average person will be between 6.5 and 7 feet tall. 6.5 and 7 feet tall. That will be average, he said. And he says that the extreme heights, today we look upon a man who is 7 feet tall as, you know, that's an extremely tall person, like Wilt Chamberlain or something like that. He said the extreme man in that day and age will be between 8 and 8.5 feet tall. And this guy knows what he's talking about. Very official type. And then he went on to say that the sexual characteristics will be barely discernible by that time. Barely discernible by that time. I wonder what Playboy will do then. Bring it up big. The straws are in the wind. Has it ever occurred to you that you might be, personally, a straw in the wind? The great howling winds that come out of that far-flung solar system. The great mysterious swirling forces in the enormous whirlpool, the maelstrom of existence itself. And this geneticist went on to say that those people of the 300 or 400 year remove from our time will look at clothing and furniture in use today as some sort of rare, strange, inexplicable oddity. You mean people were that tiny once? You mean people had bumps all over them like that once? As they stand and look at... Oh, yes, I can see the ad now, can't you? Yes, I dreamed I was 8 feet tall in my maiden form. That's what's happening, baby. And it ain't Murray the K. Who he?
Wowie! Oh, yes, sir, that's my baby!
That's great. Now reset that, will you, please? We may just use that. Is it about time for a station break? How much time we got there? We can do it, huh? Boy, speaking of super rats, this is WOR AM and FM in good old friendly New Yorkie, which is about as rat-ridden as any city I can think of offhand on the face of the globe. Here comes one now, great Scott.
Miller High Life, the bright, clear-tasting beer. of bottled beer.
There's only one champagne of bottled beer. Sparkling, flavorful, distinctive. Miller High Life. Brewed from a century-old recipe, Miller High Life has a rich heritage and tradition. A bright, clear taste. Unequaled, unquestioned, unchanging. Available on tap, in cans, and in familiar crystal clear bottles. Miller High Life is always sparkling, flavorful, distinctive. Enjoy Miller High Life yourself. Miller High Life, the champagne of bottled beer.
Boy, can you tell it's Friday, can you? Well, let's see. We have another little whoopee here for you. It's the Rover 2000 TC, a superb example of British automotive design. And it is. It genuinely is. It's a real fine piece of gear. And according to Car and Driver, and I am not exaggerating, according to Car and Driver, they say that this car is so far advanced technically and from the standpoint of overall design that it will probably be accepted by the American public possibly within 5 years. Now, they're not only putting the... Oh, wait a minute. It's very proper here in this country to imply that only America is always vaguely off base. I guess that, well, you know, it take 5 years for the Americans to understand this. And that. Do you realize it's taken the British 150 years to appreciate and understand plumbing? You understand that, friends? Yeah, so don't laugh at the Americans. You ought to see, wow, I've spent some wild nights in Britain and some very expensive places. This is the 2000 TC, and I would like to recommend that if you are thinking of buying a car, see, I'm pretty hard to get by. If you're planning to buy a car this spring, you should by all means find out about the magnificent new Rover TC. It is truly a great car, and I'm not just a woofing. You know, I'm a little embarrassed because if I started to read the stuff that people write about this car, it would sound like, you know, such the wildest kind of insane advertising, so forget it. But if you would like to see pictures of it or something, you just send your name and address here to Rover, and old Shep will see that you get the pictures, and there will be nobody calling on you wearing a derby hat and a Chesterfield coat with a furled bumper chute, looking like Anthony Eden. There will be nobody like that calling on you to sell you a car. Huh? A bowler. Oh, no, a bowler with a furled bumper chute. With a guardsman mustache. I'm here to talk to you about the Rover, you know. It's not going to be that way. Yeah, indeed. Honda. You know, a lot of people didn't understand what I was talking about when I said Honda. You know how the Bronx is. So for those of you who are in the Bronx and New Jersey, it's the Honda motorcycle. Honda, it's with an A, Honda. And it's a magnificent Japanese machine, and very shortly I'm about to take delivery on my new Honda. I've traded in my old motorcycle. For the benefit of those of you who might doubt that I have a motorcycle, I've gotten a couple of letters from guys saying, what do you mean, you got one? I've ridden motorcycles now for about 5 years, and I am awaiting delivery of my Honda 305cc Super Hawk, which I will shortly be whipping around town on. And for those of you who think that motorcycles are for guys with leather jackets and skinny girls with skulls and crossbones on the back of their sweaters, I would suggest you just look around once. There is a tremendous upsurge of motorcycles all over the eastern seaboard because people have found out they're just tremendously effective, convenient, and highly practical transportation, and they're a lot of fun, too. And Fleischmann Honda is the outfit we're talking about. They will put you on a Honda. They will make sure that you get the licenses and the insurance and teach you to ride it. Now, Fleischmann has several places. One is in Long Beach. They're at 575 Long Beach Boulevard. And it's on Sunrise Highway in West Islip, Sunrise Highway in Bayshore, and out on Queens Boulevard in Queens. They're 1 mile west of the new Macy's on Queens Boulevard. You just ride along Queens Boulevard, and 1 mile west of Macy's, you'll see Fleischmann Honda. Oh, boy, I can hardly wait to get that 305cc. And, speaking of dynamite on wheels, we will be at the Limelight tomorrow night. I can hardly wait. my brow furrowed, ready to, you know... Well, there's nothing like an audience to bring out the evil. Yeah, oh, yeah, let me tell you, Hitler never really felt his oats until he looked down from a balcony and saw 46 million people looking up at him. That makes a difference. And that we'll be at the limelight tomorrow night from 10:30 until midnight. And if you can't come down to make the scene, we'll be broadcasting it. Although, unfortunately, I would guess about 65% of what goes on at the limelight you do not hear on the air. For good reason. I'm ta-ta. It's straight down 7th Avenue, right in the heart of the village, Sheridan Square. You know, hearing the story of the super rats that are growing in England. What a fantastic development. You know, that's the kind of stuff you always hear about in science fiction. You know, when you see these horror movies, you just sit there and you watch it. It's a horror movie. You see Boris Karloff walking around. And you see, you know, all those people. Have you noticed in almost all cheapy science fiction movies, there's usually just about three people that are standing around in a little room with about 6 meters who seem to be the only people who are defending the entire world against the advancing scourge. Have you noticed that? There's usually a guy who looks real gommy. You know, he looks like Superman, only he's dressed in the... He's usually a major. It's a typical thing. He's a major in the Air Force. And he is working. He's been assigned saving the world. That's what they assigned him. See, they call him from the Pentagon. Says, up to you, Steve. You've got to save the world. You're the only one. And now he is in this little lead bunker with the professor who has devised this electronic machine that radiates fantastic electromagnetic waves, which they know, and they've never been able to try it yet, see? It's the last hope of the world, and he is about to save them against the egg people, who we know are very sensitive and, in fact, allergic to electronic waves of the kind that only the professor can make. Now, by a strange coincidence, he has a lab assistant who turns out to be Pamela, his fantastically beautiful and nubile daughter. Now, the three of them are the only ones who stand between destruction, who do stand between world annihilation. And the rest of the people are just gone. See, remember, this is a cheapy film. And once in a while, they cut in a clip of a 1937 film showing a lot of people running along Madison Avenue. That was culled from an ancient film that was starring Dick Foran. And that they've had that around the studio. And so once in a while they cut to show you that there is an outside world. But most of the film takes place in this little ersatz lead capsule. And if you look very carefully, you can see it's cardboard, see? You can see people bumping up against it on the outside, the cameraman moving the wires, see? And suddenly the mad scientist, oh, he ain't really mad, though. They all think he's mad. But he's really a great, beautiful scientist who has been laughed at all of his life. Secretly, he's been working down in his cellar now for many, many years with Pamela, his magnificent and beautiful nubile daughter, who was a biophysicist, electronic chemist. And in addition to that, she's, you know, oh, wow, holy smokes. You wonder, gee whiz, wow. And he's been working down in his cellar, see, secretly, and everybody's been laughing at him. And now the world depends on whether or not his electronic waves can stop the egg people. He looks out through the little slit, and he says, Fit, here they come. Now it is time to press the button. Please press the button, Steve. And we see the egg people, who have descended from galaxy 722 Centaurus Ipsa Pippi 1. They have come down using their thought transference waves with the sole purpose of annihilating the entire Earth. They have been, in fact, swallowing the universe bit by bit. They have eaten up Venus. They have devoured Mars. They have dealt with Alpha Centauri. And now they are about to swallow the Bronx. And Professor Hewer, in his tiny secret laboratory high atop the Triborough Bridge, is now beaming his electronic waves in the direction of Pelham Parkway. And we see the monster that was about to swallow the Bronx. Its great fangs, its egg-shaped head, its yolk pouring out all over Westchester. Ooh, 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 ooh. And Steve, the magnificent Army Major, says in his clip voice, "Thank God, Professor Huer, you have saved mankind." And Pamela turns to Steve and says, "Yes, and now we have time for us, haven't we, Steve?" And Steve looks out over that long, swirling horizon where the last of the egg people has dissolved into Pelham Bay. He turns to the professor, his arm around Pamela, and he says, "Professor, it is men like you that give me faith in mankind." And then from out of the sky, amid a great swirling galaxy, comes a mysterious voice. It is the voice of God, says, "Mankind will only survive if it discovers that love is the only secret, the only answer. Yes, love will save mankind. When will man cease to fight among his own kind? When will man cease to invent atom bombs? When will man cease to be an evil, predatory creature and become the beautiful being that he was designed and meant to be? The answer is love." This has been a Republic Cheapy production. Produced by Ralph Penorius. Directed by Alfredo Skimpy. Released through the courtesy of International Dog Artists Productions. The end. Stay tuned for the news, which follows in just a moment, followed by the Late Late Show, Sub 3, Section 8. Hey, that sounds like a great picture. How many times have you seen it, Bob? Well, they've made that one more than they made that. They've made that one more than they made High Noon. And they made High Noon at least 1,200 times. I've seen that at least 1,200 times. Gee whiz, wow. Boy, wasn't that a great picture? Don't you feel like you've seen it? Can't you see Steve there? Pamela? And they wear these kind of jumpsuits that zip up. You know, they always have those little cheapy things. I guess they just trade them back and forth between studios. They all have the same suits all the time. I noticed that. They zip up and they have a little insignia or something up here with a lightning or something through it, you know. They wear little caps and the zap guns and all that. Gee whiz, that was fun. All right. I always enjoy a good picture. I feel better about that. I was speaking of super rats. Now, since it's Friday night and a lot of people are nervous out there, I don't know whether I should tell this story. You want to tell this story? You want to hear another straw in the wind, friend? Got my Straw in the Wind music up there? No, I think the Stars and Stripes will fit this one. A Straw in the Wind. I am forever blowing bubbles. Gee whiz, first it was Robin and Batman, and then it was the Super Rats. Well, you hear this Straw in the Wind. Let me tell you this. Here's an exclusive note to the Times, the Los Angeles Times, from a staff writer, exclusive. North Las Vegas. A gambling casino's plan to employ bare-bosomed women, as blackjack dealers Thursday was denounced by Nevada's Attorney General as an affront to decent citizens who play blackjack. Now, there is what I call a true Orwellian straw in the wind. Can't you see all them decent citizens standing around there playing blackjack, playing fan-tan, playing, what is it the one they play, snake eyes? All them decent citizens being affronted by a chick standing there who's dealing out the cards, and she's doing it topless.
Come on, bring it up, Bob. Wash me. Come on, big. What I think is the most interesting part of this new little straw in the wind. I mean, well, I'm not complaining about topless friends, not at all. But have you noticed nobody's complained about topless when it appears in, say, Chinese restaurants out in San Francisco? Well, you know, they've got Chinese restaurants on topless babes. Nobody's yelling about that. They've got little old ladies who are working topless in three-hour cleaning joints out in San Francisco. Oh, I went into one place out there. Right off Market Street, yeah. I walked in there and I had my sport jacket. I wanted to get it cleaned, see? And I walked into this joint and my jacket under my arm. I said, well, my jacket clean. And this little old lady stuff, she was a good 74. Topless all the way. What do you say? I mean, how do you handle that one? Nobody say. Of course, I noticed on the outside, the big neon sign said, topless, cleaning. And the only time they get bugged is when blackjack dealers are topless. Oh, very good. Only in America. Bring it up, baby. Oh, wait a minute. Now, wait a minute. I shouldn't say that. It's not only in America. Oh, no. England has had its little whoopies for a long time. Yes, indeed. One of those things when all those chicks stand in a tableau and they're all sprayed with bronze paint. What do they call that in London? Yeah, well, no, it's not called a striptease. It's kind of like classical. They stand there like that for a minute, and there is a law that says they can be totally naked as long as they don't move. That's a London law. It's kind of nice, you know. You can get a better look at them if they don't move. They're moving targets you can't see, you know. That's a law in London. Yeah, yeah. Once the chick moves, it's obscene. As long as she stands still, in no matter what pose she stands still, it's art. You didn't know that law, huh? Oh. You have come to a guy who's been around. All together now, gang. Come on, sing it out. Pray for the U.S. of A. With your junkyards and all your Howard Johnsons. Pray for the U.S. of A. With your Mustangs, your Fords, and your Buicks, what the? Your Mets, your Yankees, and your Dr. Norman Fitzpeel. Excellent. Beautiful piece of music. Fantastic. Fantastic. Excuse me. You want to hear one other story? How much time do I have? John, I don't say, ugh. All of a sudden it's 2.5 minutes. How much time do I have? Figure it out, baby. 10 minutes? Well, there's all kinds of... This is a strong wind night, you can tell that. Maybe I ought to tell you the... You know, I read that story, The Super Rats. And, yeah, I read this thing, and I thought, wowee. I wonder how many people have ever actually seen a genuine super rat. You know, I've run into super rats in my time. And I'm... No, seriously, I don't mean people rats. That's another thing. I'm talking about real rats. Super rats. And for those of you who are women and children out there, and I don't have to tell you who you are, you know, I suggest now you quickly scurry off to another channel where they're going to talk nice and easy to you. Get down to the dial there where they're playing nice music, because I'm going to tell a story about a super rat. I remember ever since I saw the, you know, rats are kind of hypothetical things to most people. They're theoretical. They know they don't like them, but they don't see them very much. And you really don't. You know, it's a thing you hear about. You hear about rats. You hear about anacondas. You hear about, tarantulas. You hear about black widow spiders. And you just hear about these things. Once in a while, when you go to the zoo or something, and you go into the... Do you ever see a zoo that had an insect house? Yep, I know of such a zoo. And there was a zoo out in the Midwest where they have an insect house. And it's a very difficult thing to keep, of course. You know, it's not easy to feed a tarantula. I mean, you know, and they have this house, and you come in there, and it's got all these little glass windows. It's like aquariums. And they're heated, and they've got strange infrared light and everything in there to keep these insects alive. And you walk along, and you can look at a black widow spider just walking back and forth, looking out at you. Then you look in the next cage, and it's a tarantula. Have you ever seen a tarantula, really? A real, live, living, in-business tarantula?
Well, let me tell you a little story about a tarantula, in case you're interested in whoop. Do you know that, that one of the most dangerous jobs that you never hear about, one of the most dangerous jobs in America, is to work for a banana importing company? And my brother worked for about 3 months one time, one summer. You know how kids get the summer jobs? And one summer, he got a job working for a banana company. And these banana boats, the bananas would all come in, and they would come into the big docks in Chicago. You know, Chicago is a port. Many people don't know that it is a port, a genuine port. The boats come down through the St. Lawrence and all that. And these boats would pull up into this area where he worked, and he and about 45 other guys would unload banana boats. And about every third day, one of the guys would reach up with a big hook, and they'd pull out a big bunch of bananas, and they'd sling it over their back, and out of the bananas would come a tarantula the size of a football. Yeah, big, hairy football. And he'd stand there, you know, and look. And I used to go down there and watch these guys unload this stuff because my brother would always, he'd always tell me, he says, boy, he says, I'll tell you, 1 minute, he says, it's excitement all the time. And so maybe 3 days go by, and I'm down there watching them when they're working. I'm off in the afternoon, and I watch the guys unload the bananas. And they develop fantastic muscles, slinging these enormous banana stalks over their back. And they'd carry them about 40 feet, and they'd throw them down in an endless belt. That's what really they did. And these guys wore... They used to get these heavy canvas, like shirts they would make. They would make heavy shirts, canvas, with a big leather thing on the back. And that was for the protection against the, if the tarantula bit him, he couldn't bite through the canvas, you know, that kind of stuff. So he's wearing his shirt. And one day I'm there, and one of the guys, it wasn't my brother, one of the guys, he reaches up and he has his hook and he pulls the thing down and he throws it over his back. And he starts to carry it. All of a sudden, the other one, the guy that was behind him, says, look out, Charlie, drop it. And he drops this thing. Boom, down goes the bananas. And out of this big banana stalk, you hear a snake had been quietly coiled up all around the banana stalk. And, of course, when he got out, he was being shaken up. He came to, and he's looking around. And the instant he stuck his head out, the guy behind him, drop it, Charlie! And this huge, green, poisonous tropical snake with that triangular-shaped head, he goes, wow! Talk about dangerous jobs. You never think of this. You know? Banana unloaders. Believe me, a banana unloader cannot get an insurance policy. It's easier to get an insurance policy if you're a tightrope walker. Yeah. And these giant, and my kid brother one day, I remember this to my dying day. My kid brother one day, he comes home seeing he's got his lunch bucket. And we're all sitting around the house. My mother's hanging over the sink, and she's got her bathrobe on, you know, and the Brillo pad is going over there, and you could hear the coffee perking on the stove, and you could smell the meatloaf cooking and the red cabbages boiling away. And the kid brother walks into the back door. And he's got his lunch bucket, and he plunks it down on the kitchen table, and he looks around with a kind of a smart look, and he says, hey, y'all, look what I got. And he opens up the thing, and he takes out his jar, you know, it's a little glass jar that he took his potato salad with him, you know, to the work. He takes out the glass jar, and looking out of the glass jar is a tarantula. That son of a gun must have weighed 4 pounds. Oh, boy, have you ever seen those babies? You just hear about this, you know. Most people just hear tarantulas. You should see a tarantula. And I mean an operating tarantula and a tarantula that's bugged. I mean, he was really bugged. And he's circling around on the bottom of that jar with these two little beady black eyes looking out at all of us, just daring us to do anything. That tarantula. And my mother went, wow, you know, wow, wow. And Randy says, oh, what's the matter? He's in the jar. And he takes the jar and he holds up and says, I caught it today. I put the jar over him. He ran out of a stalk of bananas. I threw the jar of him. And my mother goes, ah! And the old man comes up the back porch. He doesn't know what's going on. You know, he walks into the house. He says, what's all hollering about? He takes one look at that tarantula. And he goes, ooh, ooh, ah! Ooh, wow! And the kid brother looks at it. He says, I think I'll keep it for a pet. It's a great pet. And you know that he kept that tarantula around the house for about a month. It was his pet. He kept it in the jar.
And once in a while, he'd throw a bird in or something, you know, or he'd throw a little kid or something in there, you know, to feed him, see, the tarantula. And you know that tarantula got to like us? Yeah, he'd wave a feeler at me when I walked by, you know, with a fur on it, and these little fangs click, you know. I figured, you know, he's trying to talk to me or say something. Yeah, and he particularly kind of got to like my mother. I think he liked her hair, you know, she had her hair up in the curlers. Reminded him of his mother. He had a kind of furry hair, you know, and he'd wave his feelers, and my kid brother come home, he'd look, he'd say, how are you? Yeah. You want to know what he named them? Clarence. Yeah, it's kind of a nice thing. And one day he got out. We never found them. Yeah, I'm telling you the truth. We never found them. He got out one day and that was it. He split. Don't look at me and say, oh, it's true. He got out. That was the end of it. My mother went ape for about 3 days. My old man had a heart attack. My kid brother, you know, got a little white for a couple of minutes there, and I sweated for a while, but you know, you forget about those things. 2-3 days went by, and Clarence didn't show up, and that was the end of it. And as far as I know, there is a little hut with a front porch that's kind of decaying, and it's got a back porch that's kind of settling down on the sand. There's a little hut out in Indiana someplace. Wherein lives somewhere up in the attic or someplace down in the basement, Clarence and his family. I presume he's got a family by now. Yeah, he might have found a daddy long legs or something around there. You know, a little business, a little hanky-panky. And who knows? Super rats in Indiana. Maybe even super spiders. Yeah, I didn't tell that story. I presume you mean a half a minute, or does that mean a half a second, or half a day? Half a minute, huh? All right, so that's a... Oh, yeah, I've always felt that if some pet store here... You know, one of the pet stores here in town? It cannot keep in stock piranhas. You know what the piranha fish is? That's a little fish. I'll tell you, you throw a piranha in the bathtub with your Aunt Millie, and in about 8.5 seconds, you've got nothing but a pair of dentures left. I'll tell you. And there's this store in town. They can't keep them in stock. People keep buying them. Nobody knows what they do with them. And I understand one friend of mine, he got sick of his piranha because, you know, it was eating them out of house and home. Yeah. They do, you know. They'll eat everything. They'll eat the chair. They'll eat the leg of the sofa. They'll eat everything. It was eating them out of house and home. So finally, he got bugged. He put it down the john. And as far as I know now, out there in the reservoir, out there, you just don't know. They're all over. You know, there's another store here in town where you can buy little hammerhead sharks to keep. Yeah, you can keep them in your... Yeah, they're beautiful, they're cute little things. Just don't put your finger in the water, though. You know, because a shark starts being a shark very young. Yes. Just like the pit adder, you know, the little tiny snake comes out. He is as deadly when he's only 1.5 inches long as he is when he's 9 feet long. Yeah? Doesn't take much of that goo-goo water that they squirt out of their teeth to knock you into galley west. It does not. So, you know, it's all around. You just got to keep your eyes open, keep your knees loose, and watch out. Be careful. Watch out, kiddies, or Henry Morgan will get you. Watch out. Look at that thing there. You know, speaking of pit adders. Oh, by the way, friends and neighbors and fellow sufferers, don't forget now, tomorrow night, the limelight, it's whoopee time with old Uncle Shep. Tomorrow night at 10:30 until midnight, right here on this friendly, reliable, sober, industrious station. The station that brings you news of the world of the tarantula. Amen.
Gene Shepherd from This Day in History, April 22nd, 1966. Welcome to Earth Day, here and around the globe. Here being WBAI New York, I'm Max Schmid. This has been Mass Backwards. And on Sunday night. We'll be here with the Golden Age of Radio, unearthing rare early 30s, 1930s radio comedies and variety shows. This week featuring Ed Wynn, the Fire Chief, Texaco Fire Chief from 1935, and more. I don't know, I haven't unearthed it yet, but tune in and find out. We'll have lots of surprises and thrills on the Golden Age of Radio, Sunday at 7. Stay tuned for Wake Up Call. It follows immediately here on WBAI New York.